Hello, I'm Father Mitch Paquin. Welcome to EWTN Live. We bring you guests from around the world. You know, there's a new Catholic college in Ohio that's seeking to bridge the gap between the traditional liberal arts college classroom experience and an education that offers more immediate real-world experience in the skilled trades, such as carpentry, plumbing, HVAC, electrical work, which are all in very high demand. Take a look at this little clip.
The College of St. Joseph the Worker strives to imbue upon students a love of craft and a love of Christ. And bringing those two together is the perfection of the craftsman.
Things that are worth keeping around are things that are beautiful. And I think a part of the school here and what I'm delving into myself and what I want to pass on is a desire and an ability to build beautiful things that will serve us now and that will last for generations, and they'll be received as a gift from our children and our grandchildren because these things are very good and they're beautiful. And I don't know of many other places where you could learn how to do that.
All right, our guest tonight believes in the reunification of the head and the hands, blending the Catholic traditions of intellectual study and prayer with meaningful and worthwhile training as tradesmen and craftsmen. Here to tell us more about that is the founder of the College of St. Joseph the Worker in Steubenville, Ohio. Please welcome Dr. Jacob Imam. Dr. Imam, welcome.
Thank you so much, Father.
It's good to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
When did you start this school?
This coming September will be our inaugural class, so it's imminent that students are arriving.
Oh, so you haven't started it yet?
No, it has not,
this
not begun.
This is hot off the press, oh, brand
this,
new.
Well, this is the press. Here
yes.
we are.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I was working in D.C. in 2019 when the idea really came to me, and I was talking to a friend of mine who was working in admissions at a college in the South, and he was bemoaning, even feeling guilt-ridden over his sales pitch to prospective students and their parents. He was telling them that the education was worthwhile in and of itself and that college was a financially advantageous path for a young person today. And he was coming up with some reasons to doubt that, and I think it's worthwhile considering that, and I did, you know, in the sense that more and more we're finding in universities and higher education today that education is not for passing on the hard-earned wisdom of the past. It's not for teaching you what makes life most human, as revealed in the very person of Jesus Christ. It's becoming replaced with the most boring and the most insidious forms of conformity and political correctness, mm-hmm. and that we need to return to the truths, to authority and to discipline, to the revelation that brings to light reason as it truly is. Yeah. But of course, we also need to do this in a way that's financially advantageous, instead of getting students up to their eyeballs in debt, as has become too common today.
Well, that's one of the crazy things. Now, I went to graduate school at Vanderbilt University in, 79 to 84. And our tuition, for the years I did classwork, mm-hmm. was, I thought, high at $4,200 a year.
Oh, yeah, you were getting raked over the coals with that.
Yeah, I know. And today, that same university is closer to $80,000 a year.
Yeah.
Mm. And you have to ask, for what reason is this education worth $320,000?
Right.
Why is that so worthwhile?
Well, people tell me that you can't put a price tag on these truths.
Well, and that's because they're not paying the bills.
Well, that's right. I said, well, if that's true, then don't put a $100,000 price tag on it. Yeah. We got to figure out something else.
Yeah, and there are a lot of issues with mm-hmm. it. I know that's the case. Mm-hmm. You know, the guaranteed student loans is a big factor
Huge.
For the federal government mm-hmm. in raising these prices, mm-hmm. but also that you have other issues. Increased wages for the faculty, facilities yep. have become, in some cases, almost luxurious.
Right.
So all these things are factors. But then you have to ask, why is this? Is there going to be a return on this investment?
Mm.
You know, if I can imagine if I had, you know, a good $30 million, then $32,000 in debt was okay.
Yeah.
But people are in debt in huge amounts right now.
That's right. It's a well-known fact that the average college graduate will out-earn the person without a collegiate degree. But I find that statistic almost meaningless insofar as it's comparing everybody from engineers to pizza delivery guys.
Yeah.
When the person that's seriously considering going off to a good university mm-hmm. is weighing that option next to a true path, a real mm-hmm. career path, something more akin to the skilled trades,
yeah.
like carpentry, like HVAC, like electrical. And there, it's not as clear cut. Well, in fact, it is quite clear cut. It just works the other way. And in fact, the average electrician, rather the median electrician and the median plumber, will out-earn the median college graduate for the entirety of their career. And the
Exactly.
You know, and there you find perhaps a better path, a more advantageous path for many people if that financial gain is what you're seeking out most. And of course, you mentioned a moment ago that there is a real crisis, or there's a real demand, rather, for the skilled trades arising from a crisis of this quantity problem that mm-hmm. we're finding. There's just not enough people going into it. But I think that there is something absolutely essential in not giving up on higher education. If you have a slew of people coming in with greater technological abilities, but without the faith, then we really haven't gained much at all.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so when we are looking at higher education in the sorry state, the truly sorry state that it's in today, we can't say we got to try the next thing. Because it was the Catholic Church that founded the first universities, that founded the first colleges. And to give up on it would be to give up on a gift that the church gave to the world. We cannot give up on it. We have to reclaim it.
Well, it's not just that we founded the first. We invented the concept of the university.
That's right.
This is a Catholic development that came from monastery schools to cathedral schools to eventually the University of Paris and then the others that followed afterwards. I think this is very key. And I think one other, it's been a big bone of contention for me is that you have less freedom of speech in a modern university than you did at the University of Paris in the Middle Ages.
Mm.
You hear talk about how oppressive the Middle Ages was and such, but with the Inquisition, you had more freedom of speech at the University of Paris than you do at Harvard, Yale, and these other schools, Columbia.
That's right. I think the reason for that, or one of the reasons for that, is that the truth actually can be more liberal. And I mean that in the best sense.
Yes.
Like if a kid
is, in the sense of being more freeing.
That's right. That's right. And you can even have a great largesse towards the person that's in the wrong when you are stable and knowing what is actually true. I mean, think about a parent and a kid who's throwing a tantrum. The parent who is in peace and in self-control is able to stoop down to the child's level, try and talk with him, try and work with him, instead of just going ahead and spanking him right away. That actually would be being a terrible parent and would reveal, if you just slapped him right away, that would reveal that you're not really in control.
Yeah.
And that is what we're seeing in modern higher education, is that they're not really in control because they don't really know the truth.
And they don't believe that there is truth.
That's right.
That's a key element. They don't believe there's truth, and yet they become more autocratic about the small ideas they think they know, which often they don't, and they don't allow freedom of speech. Their sense of correctness is both changing with fashion. It's not really commitment to what's true in their, you know, fashions. It changes all the time, and then it's more autocratic. We have a clip about, you know, this problem, you know, by why the College of St. Joseph is a way to make an improvement on this typical college deal right now that is not only not working, but is going crazy. Mm. Let's take a look at the clip.
Great.
A college is an incubator. You go there to grow into what God wants you to be. That's the ideal. It's not really happening today. And so what we're doing is very special. And what I'm most excited about is that we're creating a totally different culture.
Why are we even here? To live life well, to live with our families well, to live in community well, to worship well.
By spending time in the morning in the chapel, and then going to the classroom, and then going to the shop, and being in community with other craftsmen, there's a culture that we hope to inculcate that sends people forth with sort of a renewed vision of what people are capable of. Since joining the College of St. Joseph the Worker, I've realized just how important and how innovative, how different, and how necessary this college is going to be for the world. It's going to transform our town, and then it's going to grow up and transform our culture.
The truth that we really hold dear here is that Christ transforms every aspect of our lives. And when he breaks into the world, he's transforming the very social order that he was born into. We believe that the College of St. Joseph the Worker is supposed to be different, that it's uniquely different, because Christ doesn't just change our minds and our hearts, but he actively transforms the very pattern and order of our living.
This is a very important element, because what you're talking about is not just a trade school. That some of these are commercial trade schools will give us this much money and we'll teach how to drive a truck or something. This is different. Mm-hmm. This is doing the work of the university of integrating all the knowledge. The university comes from the word universe and pulling all these different elements together. That's what it sounds like you're trying to do here, is pull together all the aspects of life and integrate it with the work career.
You mentioned a moment ago the monastery schools, and I often go back to this, where you find that the life of the monk was between the library where he studied, the chapel where he prayed, and the fields where he worked. And that dance between amongst the library, the chapel, and the fields was not just a model of education as it's supposed to be, fully bringing head and hands together, active and contemplative, married together. But it was also the first business model, too. It made the thing sustainable. And I think we've forgotten both of those elements, that we are truly incarnate and that we should be stable all at once.
There's this important element of what you just said. We think about, again, the folks in the Enlightenment saw themselves as bringing the light of reason to the world. And they referred to the early Middle Ages as the Dark Ages.
Right.
And this is where, in a certain sense, they were stupid people calling it the Dark Ages. Because this integration that you're talking about of work and prayer and learning, that was inherent in the monasteries didn't just sustain the monastery. Look at how those monasteries were the core of so many new cities and towns in Europe. Munich is named from the German, the Latin word monachium, meaning monastery. That was its core. Salzburg in Austria, and all throughout Europe, the monasteries were the core of rebuilding a civilization after the barbarians destroyed the Roman. It wasn't the church that destroyed Rome, it was the barbarians.
That's right.
And the church renewed by converting the barbarians and bringing them to the monasteries.
I think that when we look at approaching a new vision of the universities, we have to regain the new vision of humanity that Christ brought to the world. I think I hear so often that there is this dichotomy between a person meant for college and a person meant for the trades that is has its roots not in the Christian tradition, but in a much older pagan tradition. I think here about the Greek city-states, some like Sparta and Thebes, that actually had laws on the books forbidding citizens from engaging in manual labor. Athens didn't have one of these laws, but perhaps her most celebrated son, Aristotle, wrote in his Politics that citizens ought not be manual laborers, craftsmen is the word that he uses, because their life is ignoble and inimical to the life of virtue. The Romans, I don't think, are all that much better.
No.
Those like Livy and Gellius and Dionysius said the same thing about citizens ought not to be laborers.
Well, they said it about patricians.
Well, patricians, that's true.
Patricians could not work
in
the labor. They didn't mind plebeians doing that.
That's true. That's true. That's a good addendum.
That,
but Cicero will go on and say about humans generally, and even citizens in total, that they ought not be tradesmen because that profession is vulgar, for there's nothing respectable about a workshop. And I think this is important to realize. This Greco-Roman world hated labor, and that's the very world that the word became flesh in, and then spent most of the years of his life at a carpenter's bench.
See, that's something that why there's a famous mockery of Jesus.
That's right.
Where it's a man on a cross, it's a crucified man, but he has a donkey's head. This was a pagan mockery of Jesus because Christians portrayed him as a carpenter, and we exalt that. We have taken over the feast of May Day with Saint Joseph the Worker.
That's great.
And though the communists have had their final clearance closeout sales on statues of Marx and Lenin, we still celebrate Saint Joseph and the dignity of work. This is very much part of our Catholic life.
Right, because work, what it does, first and foremost, is it forms us. Work is transformative activity, where we take a part of the world and we give it a new form, we give it a new shape. We then integrate that into the social life of man, raising it up from the dignity in which it was created to a new dignity in the rational life of humanity. What the problem that you see in ancient civilizations is they don't realize the goodness of that activity. And here you could think about even the ancient Babylonians, and I think particularly about the Atrahasis, actually, which was an origin story found in Babylon. So if you're a good Catholic growing up, your parents might have read you the Bible, which opens in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. But if you were a good Babylonian boy 3,000 years ago and your parents wanted to tell you the origin story, they would start it off like this. When the gods rather than the men worked and bore the drudgery. That's how their story opened up.
Yeah.
And work was not something to be celebrated. In fact, the reason why the gods created man was so that they could do the work in their stead. It was not a gift. It was a curse. But yes. When did God give Adam work? Before or after the fall? Before the fall. He put man in the garden to till and to keep the garden. That was a transformation of the world, raising it up into a new dignity so that it could participate in divine worship, but also that it is the way in which we mark our souls with the habits that are good, and we call those virtues.
And it's important, in the Genesis text, God planted the garden, but the man that he made in his image and likeness, he put there to care for it.
That's right.
That this is a sharing in God's creation, and that there's great dignity in being a laborer and a worker. And this is something that not only did Jesus live out, but the church has saints and patron saints for every single career you can think of.
That's a great point.
You know, that, I mean, we have, count them, ladies and gentlemen, 9 patron saints for beer making.
So you know that it's particularly noble.
And it was the monks that we talked about who invented what we now call beer. The earlier forms of beer were sweet, but the monks were the ones who came up with adding hops to the beer. And this was part of the, and they have lots of patron saints for making beer. You know, from St. Arnold and St. Bridget and so on. But we have patrons for fishermen, for farmers, for different aspects of Carpenter St. Joseph, of course. Yeah. This is, we celebrate that, and it's not something against human dignity. It's part of our dignity.
Right, and to return to the Genesis account, because I think this is absolutely critical. Like, why do we celebrate this just so much? Well, what was the point of working in Genesis? Was it to eat? No, of course not. I mean, God gave him the trees that bore fruit and said, eat of it. He had delivered the food to him already. Work was ultimately, and first and foremost, acts of worship. I mean, even those Hebrew words for to till and to keep, shamar and abad, that those are more often used in the Old Testament to speak about liturgical acts and keeping the law than they are about agriculture and farming. Yeah. That work, everything from beekeeping to beer making, is ultimately about worship, and that we are totally convinced in the Catholic tradition that this is not, that work is not principally about just covering our necessities or overcoming a sense of scarcity, however real that might be or not real. I think the narrative is fundamentally about abundance and not about scarcity. It is really about the transformative activity so that our souls might really bear the image of Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I think that that's an extremely important element of why we do this. And well, I just want to read a quote from you, actually.
Oh, okay.
Now what did I say? It's like getting called by your wife, right?
Yeah.
What did I say this time? But you'd written down once, some people are meant for college, others for the trades, I often hear, but there's something profoundly anti-Christian about the seemingly harmless statement. It is a justification for the great divorce between the head and the hands, between the active and the contemplative. This is not merely a sociological problem, it is a theological one. And it is a theological problem that was alive and well in the cultural context that Christ entered into. Hmm. And you know, this
I do believe that, actually.
Yeah, good. Good. So you're not in trouble this time. But it is an important thing to see that this integration of these different elements is part of our education. So this is a great point. And I think instead of getting into a college where you oftentimes study something so meaningful that there's no work in that area. You know, we've seen that a lot with gender studies. The only job you can get with a degree in gender studies is to teach gender studies.
or work in HR at a corporation, maybe. Yeah.
Maybe.
Right.
We end up hated. Everybody.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, I know it.
Yeah.
I hear about these things all the time. What else are you going to find? And accept big debt that then you hope the federal government will pay for you on the backs of people who work for a living.
That's right.
It's crazy.
It is. One of the things that I'll kind of focus on here is that I do believe that by having a college that simultaneously raises up students in the Catholic intellectual tradition, particularly in an extremely robust way, as well as the skilled trades, we are enabling both of those two fields of studies to become more truly themselves. Mm-hmm. And I say this in a way kind of analogous to marriage, that in marriage, husband and wife become one. But actually what you find also is that the man becomes more masculine and the woman becomes more feminine in marriage, that he raises up to guard and protect, to provide and shelter her. She becomes a mother and she bears the fruit of his children, that is his children, that they become more themselves while also uniting more closely together. And this is what we're trying to do at the College of St. Joseph the Worker. By uniting the Catholic intellectual tradition to the skilled trades, we aren't trying to say, look, the theology is going to get you a great job later on in life. It won't. No. We're never going to make that claim. We don't have to, because we have the trades that will do that. That most people, they don't even realize that so many plumbers are making over $200,000 a year. That's not just a possibility. That's a reality right now, today. And so you can rely on that to be able to handle the sheltering, the protection, to be able to raise up a great family without trying to rely on your theology degree as a financial vehicle. That's not what it's there for. It's profoundly practical in the sense that it will guide every decision in the entirety of your life, or it ought to at least. Mm-hmm. But it's not technical in the sense that it does not give you a technical skill by which to produce something in particular and then sell it in a market. Yeah. And so this is one thing that I'm just very excited about, to redeem both elements to make them more truly themselves by having them married together.
As someone with a theology doctorate, it's very hurtful, but I'm over. I shared one with you. This is something that I can see is absolutely correct. As a professor of theology, I did not make a lot of money. I understood that. Mm-hmm. If I were teaching law, they would pay me, more than three, sometimes four times as much as I got as a theology professor, because they know you are giving up a very lucrative career in the law to teach others.
That's right.
Or maybe you've already done your career, you're ready to move on to something like teaching and thinking about the law, and so you've got that in your past and you don't mind taking the pay cut. But, a theology professor is way down in the wages. That's life. I don't need it. Mm-hmm. That's not something why I teach theology.
Right.
But I don't have a family.
Right.
I'm not sending my children to college because I don't have any children. So that makes it very feasible for me to do. A man or woman who is raising a family need to have a solid income to take care of them, especially in the present economy. And I think this is really opening up tremendous possibilities, as three times as many people retire from the trades and the crafts as enter it.
That's right. It's a 3-to-1 ratio right now. We are bleeding tradesmen currently. There are 544,000 unplaced jobs right now. That means that there are voids. There's jobs on the market being marketed and no one is filling them.
No.
And for me at the college, leading this new college, I see that there is a massive problem that we identify here as a quantity problem in the trades, but we are much more focused on the quality problem in the trades. I talk to contractors every day, and they'll tell me that they can't find people to show up to work on time, to show up to work in the right state of mind. But of course, that is absolutely...
That is to say, sober.
That's right.
I'm being very frank. People showing up in the oil fields, sober.
Yeah, that's right.
They're not on cocaine. They're not dealing with a hangover from the night before. Mm-hmm. Will they be there? Mm-hmm. Will they have a broken jaw from the fight at the bar the night before?
Yeah.
These are real issues. I have friends who work in the oil business out in Texas. And you know, those are real issues. And they need good trade people who have that moral integrity.
That's right.
And purpose in life.
That's right. Yes. I think that those are just the bare minimums. Of course, the moral life is, there's no ceiling to that. But to show up to work on time and with the right state of mind, I mean, look.
And show up every workday?
And the show, well, if you're just talking about that, imagine if you had an employee that you described that way, but you haven't said anything about his skill at this point, right? I mean, so what we're really looking at is trying to find people who are eager to learn so that we can teach them not just one trade, but the entire anatomy of a home, the entire logic of a building, so they know how each part works together in the whole, that they know the composites and their structures so that they might know the more technical, the more subtle ways of building. You saw in that video, you see it right now, timber framing. If you want to know what Jesus and St. Joseph did as carpenters, it was this, it was timber framing. We have to keep this alive to be able to build in ways that will regain the Christian imagination and the Christian spirit, and not just keeping the bare minimums. We at the College of St. Joseph the Worker are not just interested in filling job sites with laborers, but with job sites with leaders. And that means that we need to form them both in the active and the contemplative lives.
I was, I was fishing when Hurricane Ida hit the coast of Louisiana.
I mean, the fish were coming to you at that point.
I was trying to get away from the water. We really had to hustle to get out of there.
That's quite frightening, actually.
And, yeah. The town, yeah. I was at Dulac, Louisiana. I was right on, a bayou that's right by the Gulf. Mm. And it was devastated. Mm. And these poor people, they're Native Americans. They've been living there for hundreds of years. And the federal government said, well, we'll help you if you sell us your land and we can move you out. You know, the Indians heard that from the federal government before. They weren't falling for it, But finding skilled people, who was it that came through? It was Mennonites. And they live this out. They have that integration of their faith and service, but they've got the skills.
Yep.
And they were putting up a house a week.
That's incredible.
They would send teams to do that. These are the kind, and they're so admirable. They really are. This is something that is very, very useful. They still have to work on the church. They still can't get into the Catholic Church because it was just lifted completely off of its foundation, like an umbrella going up and then set down, but you can't go in it. But, they're trying to get, and having the people that integrate the values of showing up, serving, and doing this great work is really wonderful to do.
Right. I think about, as you're saying this, the rampant anxiety that we're seeing in this generation, and particularly poignant amongst the Gen Zers who are coming into college now and just graduating. that it is an age of anxiety,
yeah,
and that the trades can work to solve part of that problem. And I think of this
100%
for a number of reasons. I'm glad you agree even before I make an argument.
We got to take a break. If you want to learn more about the College of St. Joseph the Worker, go visit their website. It's called collegeofstjoseph.com. College of St. Joseph, it's just stjoseph.com. We're going to come back and talk more about this really wonderful work and this as part of the healing of our culture by us Catholics. So please stay with us. We are speaking with Jacob Imam, the founder of the College of St. Joseph the Worker. It's Steubenville, Ohio. And again, it's a great concept of a school that integrates an intellectual tradition with the faith and literature and all the rest, but also teaches the trades in a society that's losing the trades.
Yeah,
the vocation to the trades is out the window. And I think that's worth noting. We often speak about how few vocations we have to the priesthood and the religious sisters.
Mm-hmm.
But it's you don't have people finding their vocation to be married.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not, you know, more than half of children are born to unmarried people.
Right.
They don't follow that vocation either. which puts the lie to the theory that, well, if you let the priest get married, we get more. They don't get married.
That's a great point.
This is, you know, crazy. But also we don't see people taking on the trades either, even though they pay more.
Mm.
There's a madness out there.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead.
I think we've forgotten the dignity of the trades.
Yes.
We talk about the finances of it, and that's true. I really do think that the trades help alleviate a financial anxiety for young people today. You do find a lot of folks saying that they put off marriage because they want to be more stable financially. Well, if you go into the trades, you avoid debt and you make a great living to be able to provide for that earlier.
Yep.
But I think it also alleviates a number of other forms of anxiety that our society is feeling so much.
Mm-hmm.
A big one is that we are a very rootless and transient people. Where we were born and raised is often not where we live and where we work. But with the trades, the building has to be built here. The structure has to be erected here. You can't export that to China or to Mexico, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that gives people an occasion to be grounded in a place, really dedicated and faithful to it, so that they can have a real stability, a rootedness, which is a requirement of true friendship and charity.
Yeah.
I think also about the anxiety that it alleviates insofar as you produce something real. I mean, so many of us who spend most of our days behind a computer don't see a tangible difference in the world as a result of our efforts.
Mm-hmm.
But with the trades, I like to say that they have this step back effect. At the end of the day, they can take a step back and take a look at what they did that is actually different. And that encourages the soul in some real tremendous ways.
Well, there's a satisfaction in seeing this thing that makes somebody really happy.
Yeah.
You know, there's a joy in that, or serves them. You know, you know, I don't know that, well, some people, especially when you get older, you really appreciate a good toilet.
Yeah,
but that's not a big deal for most people. But it's, you know, having...
Until you don't have one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, or running water and all those things that are part of the infrastructure. They're infra because you don't see a lot of it until you need it.
Yeah.
How are you going to get that fixed?
Mm.
And, you know, it's something that I have been addressing. I meet with a local pastor, Bishop James Lowe and other pastors, and we meet with a lot of the politicians about concerns we have in the communities. And it's, I keep saying to the politicians, you need to push for the trades in the public schools. Look at how many public school systems have more than half of their students drop out.
Wow.
Especially boys.
Yep.
Young men drop out of school before they graduate. And I've suggested have an automotive program that they get a car, and if they graduate from college, you hand over the title of the car and it's theirs.
It's pretty special, yeah.
Would that be cool?
Oh, my goodness.
The same thing if you're going into the plumbing trade or carpentry and so on, that each year your toolkit grows, and when you graduate, the title to that toolkit is given to you.
Yeah.
That this, you earn your place in the trade and the tools you need. And then you think about the impact.
Yeah.
You want the inner cities that have a lot of rundown houses, who's gonna make them nice?
Yeah. Right.
You need people from the neighborhood. You rebuild the economy of your neighborhood by having people from your neighborhood become the tradesmen that know how to do this. It just makes good sense.
How do they respond to you when you propose this?
Well, that's a good idea. But pushback from the teachers' unions who only know the liberal arts. They don't know the trades. And you look at old movies, the guy who taught shop, automotive and all that, they were put down by the liberal arts teachers. They were sort of second class teachers. We had trades courses in schools when I was growing up. They were in the background. This is elevating it again to the proper dignity. That's what I see you doing.
Right. Well, I think if the word became flesh and picked up a hammer, it's a pretty good path to go down. But particularly for really intelligent students, and that's really what we are marketing towards, is the really elite, high-achieving students. Our incoming class that's arriving in a very short period of time, the average standardized test score is clocking in at the 90th percentile. I mean, these are really brilliant kids that want to be electricians, that want to be plumbers, that want to be carpenters, because they do, and I'm so grateful for this, they do realize that there is a great dignity, there's a real complexity to the trades. And I think this is one of the reasons why people have hardly even considered automating the trades. Elon Musk said at one point that the skilled trades are going to be the last thing that are computerized, because it takes human ingenuity to come into a situation, to evaluate what's going on, troubleshoot what's going on, and come up with a creative solution.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that means that it's eminently human.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, Mother Angelica had gotten so many folks from the trades to come here. Now, a lot of them were just Alabama good old boys.
Yeah.
But they knew what they were doing, and they didn't have much money, and they loved Mother, so they did this out of great love. And, wow. You know, they're just wonderful, wonderful workers, and came up with solutions that are ingenious. But because they had that skill, they could be genius about the trades.
Yeah. Again, I think about Genesis here, is that when you think about work and the reality of work, where you have to start is actually in the mind, in the soul of a person, to look at a situation and to think about how it could look in recreating it. How could it be changed? And of course, that is an invisible spiritual experience of thinking, of imagining what could be different. But of course, it's a very technical and a very intricate, a very demanding enterprise as well, to be able to have the creativity to be able to come up with something new before you manifest it in the world as well. So there you find, I mean, right there, even in the description, a marriage between heaven and earth, mm-hmm. the spiritual and the material, the invisible and the visible, coming together in the very reality of work itself. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is, this starts, without trying to get too theoretical about this, this not only unveils something marvelous, even sacerdotal, in terms of our universal human vocation to marry heaven and earth together, mm-hmm. But also something that's really quite interesting about the nature of creativity itself. A lot of people today will just think about creativity as a God-given talent. And to some extent, that's true. Some people are, you would say, more creative than others mm-hmm. in some regard. Sure. But to just say that you're born with it is absolutely ludicrous, how wild Einstein's hair was the same about his great mathematical prowess, right? The way that Einstein got to be such a genius is because he did the standard equations that everybody did throughout the majority of his career before he was able to find subtleties and openings of how to push the body of knowledge further forward, right? It means doing the grunt work of figuring it out. Same thing with the pianist. Yeah, you only get to play Bach if you play Twinkle Twinkle Little Star first, right?
Well, Bach had to play that first.
Yeah, Bach had to play that first, that's right.
But you know, Mozart started playing and composing when he was 3, but he did his scales first. Mm-hmm. You just have to do that. Now, one of the questions I have about mm-hmm. your program, you know, I know folks who say are music school, mm-hmm. They will focus on one major instrument. There'll be piano or voice or mm-hmm. one of the others. Another great school that your school reminds me of is John Paul the Great University out in San Diego training people in the media and to be very practical, very hands-on mm-hmm. in the media. And they can major in different parts. Are you going to have like a plumbing major or how are you doing this?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we're not using the terms major to talk about this because those are properly academic topics and so or categories. And I think it's important to retain those as we bring it together. Just again, trying to retain the true masculinity of the husband and the femininity of the wife as they unite together. So in their goodness, right? Mm-hmm. So we have one major, it's in Catholic studies. Mm-hmm. So it's a very robust curriculum. I'd love to talk about it at some point. But then you'd have different concentrations. So we have concentrations in plumbing, in HVAC, in masonry, in carpentry, in electrical. But you are not allowed to declare your concentration until the second year. And the reason why is this, that if you go to a standard trade school today, you pick your one trade and you just study that one trade. It will be a very good education in plumbing or in HVAC, but you will not know how that one concentration fits together in the whole, as a whole. I laugh about just the number of houses I've walked into and I see the HVAC tech just cut through, right through the floor joists. This is compromising the structure of the house. It's our president, Mike Sullivan, calls an HVAC attack, which I love that he calls it that. But that is, again, a very basic problem. What are the more subtle and dynamic issues that are not being noticed or addressed, something that's not as obvious as cutting through the joists of a house, right? We need to go through the entire anatomy of our home with our students. And so that first year, they're spending 20 hours in the workshop every single week with us, going through that, even going on in their related instruction through the next few years. Mm-hmm. They're taking courses on composites and their structures to really be able to understand what will work and what won't.
Now, are you talking about a 4-year degree with this?
This is a great question. Again, I will answer it. But if you think about your BA degree, usually it takes you about 4 years to earn. Hopefully it only takes 4 years. Well, what about your journeyman's card, which is another certification they'll be earning from us? Well, usually that takes about 4 or 5 years. So what we're doing is taking what would otherwise be 8 or 9 years of work and compressing it into a very rigorous 6-year program.
Okay.
The first 3 years are in Steubenville, Ohio. Mm-hmm. The next 3 years are actually in the community that our students want to dedicate themselves to and live long term. Sooner rather than later, we place them there as early as we can. And the way in which we're managing that is that we're building out this craftsman network. We're going across the country, finding good people to place our students with that will be really an extension of their education at the College of St. Joseph the Worker. We're vetting these people for the quality of their faith and the quality of their craftsmanship. Mm-hmm. Which is quite a high bar, actually, these days to see those two married together. And so we place them, the rest of their BA goes to an online forum, but the majority of that theology coursework will have been accomplished in the first 3 years in person.
Okay. And, you know, one of the things, too, I saw mostly pictures of guys. Do you have young ladies also coming?
Good question. So we are absolutely welcoming applications from ladies. In our first round of applications, 93% were from men. Guess what the acceptance rate for men was? 93%.
Is that right?
So we're not trying to smudge statistics in any way. Yeah. We're really just evaluating who is that person that hungers to learn, hungers after the intellectual life, and also hungers for great craftsmanship.
You know, and a lot of times, I have obviously no problem. I know women that are truck drivers and, yeah, and in the trades and all sorts, no problem. But there is something about guys that this resonates with. Mm-hmm. That, you know, and in an age when masculinity is attacked every day as something toxic. Mm. This is saying, no, it's not toxic. Being a guy is a good thing. And there are certain things that guys go to very connaturally.
That's right.
We really like some of these things, and it's, you know, easy to slide into. And, you know, I doubt that you're going to be saying that that's toxic masculinity to want to use a hammer with your hand and make something work.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, you know, I have three little boys, and it's like they don't choose a doll; they choose a truck.
Yeah.
You know, they don't play with tee sets. They want a hammer. You know, these are aspects of masculinity that are actually built into us.
Yeah.
The desire is to take the world and change it in some way.
Yeah.
But I would also add in there that there is something about this that really leans into the free choice of men as well. So I think about Sweden, you know, which is known for being very progressive, very
yeah,
liberal, saying, you know, women can choose whatever they want to do. And what do you find there is that there is a higher percentage of men in the skilled trades there than there is even in America.
Yeah.
This is not something that is forced upon people. I don't want to force anything upon people.
No,
I want to
no,
cultivate that's... the goodness that God has created them with.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. But, you know, I've said to the politicians, if you want young men to stay in school, let them learn the trades.
Yeah.
And give them a good reward as a result.
Mm.
Yeah, they just will. I just want to make sure that we get people to know more. I can encourage you to learn more about the College of St. Joseph the Worker. You can easily just go to their website, collegeofstjoseph.com. I know a number of young people who, you know, they're really smart. They just want to work with their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that they'll do. And it's really been a delight to talk about this because it's something that I am a strong supporter of. I love my academic background. I love the work that I do in academics. It's great, but I also appreciate the folks that work in the trades. I can't do anything without them. If they're not out there, you know, cutting trees, I don't have any books.
That's right.
Well, thank you very much, Jacob.
Thank
I appreciate
you so
it so much.
Father Mitch,
and I want to pray for you. May the Lord bless you by the intercession of St. Joseph. Bless you with all the dignity of working and serving others with your hands as well as with your hearts and your minds. Almighty God bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. And we can bring Dr. Jacob Imam and do this program and all the other programs we do only because this network is brought to you by you. So please keep us in between your gas bill, your electric bill, and cable bill. And if you do that, we'll be able to pay our bills too. God bless you all, and thank you.